we have a unique opportunity of looking back on several years now of practical experience with the RFS, and it's time to ask what that experience has taught us. It is also time to project what the future might hold for the RFS as we continue to implement the stringent and increasing targets. We began this process, as many of you know, many of you participated in it, by issuing a series of bipartisan white papers on the major topics associated with the RFS, the blend wall and fuel compatibility issues, agriculture sector issues, environmental concerns, energy policy considerations, and we are set to release the final white paper that deals with implementation and enforcement issues. The wide-ranging stakeholder responses to the questions posed in these white papers attest to the fact that many people have been affected by the RFS and that we need to be mindful of all of its direct and indirect impacts. We have a distinguished panel of witnesses with us today, and I'm going to introduce them after the opening statements. And at this time, I'd like to yield as much time as he may consume the gentleman from Texas, Mr. Barton, for the purposes of an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In 2005, I was chairman of the committee and chairman of the conference committee that passed the Energy Policy Act, and I supported the inclusion of a renewable fuel standard in that bill. In 2007, I was the ranking member on the committee, and I strongly opposed the bill in 2007 that greatly expanded it. So I guess you could say I'm 50-50, and I've been on both sides of the issue. I don't want there to be any misunderstanding today, however. The current law as it is unworkable and unsustainable, and I support total and full repeal. I think it has outlived its usefulness. I want to quote from the first line of the Energy Information Administration's written testimony: the RFS program is not projected to come close to achievement of the legislated target, end quote. So I welcome this hearing. I encourage the subcommittee and the full committee under the leadership of Chairman Upton to take a serious look at this, and I am hopeful that at some time this year we can move a repeal bill. And with that, I still have a minute to go, so I'm happy to yield to whoever the chairman would like for me to yield to.
Does anybody want the last 40 seconds? Okay, I yield back the balance of my time. At this time, I recognize the gentleman from Illinois, Mr. Rush, for a five-minute opening statement.
I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for holding this important hearing on the RFS. Over the course of the past year, my office has literally taken dozens of meetings on this critical topic, both from proponents who support the RFS as it is, as well as from the opponents who would like to see the RFS either modified or repealed altogether. Mr. Chairman, for stakeholders from my home state of Illinois, there are few energy issues as important as the matter of the RFS, and have always been very supportive of this policy because I believe since its inception it has achieved many of the goals that it was first enacted to do. During the debate in the Energy Policy Act of 2005, when the RFS was first established, and subsequently in the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007, when the policy was significantly modified and expanded, there was always strong bipartisan support for the RFS. Members on both sides of the aisle touted the potential benefits of enacting a renewable fuel standard, which included reducing U.S. dependence on oil, enhancing energy security, bolstering the agricultural economy, and addressing the challenges of climate change by reducing greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector. Today, I believe the RFS has been successful in meeting each of these objectives while also helping to drive job creation and economic investment. For instance, the RFS has played a key role in helping America's ethanol industry support 400,000 jobs nationwide, including 54,000 jobs in my state of Illinois alone. And it has resulted in over $40 billion in economic activity. Mr. Chairman, the RFS has indeed helped to make us more energy secure, with America's ethanol industry now producing 10% of the nation's vehicle fuel supply, helping to reduce our dependence on foreign oil by 25% since 2005. Additionally, the octane from ethanol will also be a key component in helping auto manufacturers meet their CAFE standards as they turn towards downsized turbocharged engines with increased combustion rations that will need higher octane fuel such as ethanol to meet new mileage standards. Mr. Chairman, as President Obama stated yesterday, we cannot continue to overlook the fact that over the past year and a half alone, all across our nation, we have seen more frequent record-breaking temperatures and history-making extreme weather events, including severe wildfires, hurricanes, tornadoes, and flooding, events that scientists tell us are all associated with man-made climate change. So today, more than ever, it is essential to move towards an energy policy that requires an even greater reliance on renewable sources of energy and alternative fuels, as the RFS mandates, and away from carbon-intense fossil fuels that emit dangerous levels of greenhouse gases and contribute to climate change. Mr. Chairman, I'm glad that we're having this hearing today, one of several, where we can lay out all the facts, including both the opportunities and the challenges to implementing the RFS as currently drafted, and we can work to find common ground on this issue moving forward. Thank you. Now I yield back to my time.
Gentleman yields back. This time I recognize the chairman of the full committee, Mr. Upton, for a five-minute opening statement.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is an exciting time for energy policy and for the possibilities created by our domestic energy abundance. Last week, the subcommittee held two hearings, one on the nation's potential for increased energy exports and the other on the benefits of affordable energy to the domestic manufacturing sector. Just a few short years ago, many would have scoffed at the suggestion that America could produce enough domestic energy to expand its exports or that low natural gas prices would induce a manufacturing renaissance. But it's happening, and it can continue to happen if we have the right policies in place. And while we strive to make good use of the nation's coal, oil, and natural gas, we also have to allow for renewable energy to be part of that mix. But we need to make sure that it's done right. And that's why we are undertaking our deliberate review of the renewable fuel standard. The committee started the review process with a series of bipartisan white papers on RFS. Each white paper highlighted a particular subtopic and solicited input from stakeholders. And as you can imagine, the response has been overwhelming. And I thank Ranking Member Waxman and his staff for working cooperatively with us and the commenters for their participation as well. And I can assure them that their input will, in fact, help us inform our process. And now we move on to our first hearing, which is going to be the committee's first hearing specifically devoted to the RFS since the program was last revised in 07. The purpose of this initial hearing is essentially to perform a checkup on the RFS. What's gone according to plan and what has not? No policy is certainly perfect, especially one that is now more than 5 years old. It's time to assess the RFS in light of what we now know. Today, we commence our effort with three federal agencies that play a role in putting the RFS into action. Congress gave the reins of the program to EPA, and the agency's responsibilities are indeed extensive. Several of these responsibilities require input from other agencies, including the Energy Information Administration, as well as the Department of Agriculture. This hearing is going to cover a number of issues, and I'm particularly mindful of the impact of the RFS on the auto industry. and on our car owners. Fuels and vehicles operate as a system, and we need to ensure that provisions in the RFS are compatible with existing vehicles as well as the new cars and trucks that are going to be manufacturing and sold in the years ahead. One of the things that Congress could not have anticipated back in 07 is the very ambitious new CAFE GHG standards that are going to require a near doubling of the fuel economy by 2025. Harmonizing these rules with the requirements of the RFS is just one issue for which a constructive debate is needed. The white papers and having today's hearing have gotten the discussion off to a positive start. I look forward to working with every one of our members on this committee in the coming weeks as we continue to weigh our work and oversight towards addressing the very real issues that implementation of the RFS presents going forward. And I don't know if there are other Republican members on my side that wish the balance of my time, but seeing none, I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. This time, recognize the gentleman from California, Mr. Waxman, for a five-minute opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday, President Obama laid out a plan to cut carbon pollution, fight climate change, and protect the health and future of America's children. The plan sets us on a path to reduce carbon pollution by 17% by 2020, which is what we need to do in the near term. In his speech, the president talked about the moral imperative for action on climate change. As he told the college students in the audience, quote, "The question now is whether we have the courage to act before it's too late. How we answer will have a profound impact on the world that we leave behind, not just to you, but to your children and to your grandchildren," end quote. As the president's plan recognizes, there is no silver bullet. Success will require sustained action across multiple fronts. One of the most critical fronts is transportation. The transportation sector is our country's largest consumer of oil and the second largest emitter of carbon pollution. Thanks to President Obama, we already have new standards to make vehicles far more efficient and less carbon polluting. Those standards are saving Americans money at the pump, enhancing our energy security, and boosting our economy, as well as cutting carbon pollution. But as long as our transportation system relies exclusively on fossil fuels, we will continue to make climate change worse. Fuel efficiency alone will not achieve the 80% reduction in climate pollution that we need by 2050 to avoid catastrophic climate change. The shift to hybrids and electric vehicles is a big part of the solution, but low-carbon renewable fuels can also contribute significantly. And for some transportation sectors, such as aviation and shipping, low-carbon liquid fuels are the only option besides efficiency. Today, we are examining a law, the Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS, that is driving development of those new low-carbon renewable fuels. The RFS is one of the few laws adopted by Congress that explicitly and directly reduces carbon pollution. Under this law, U.S. companies last year produced 20,000 gallons of an advanced renewable fuel called cellulosic ethanol, which is made from materials such as crop residues and switchgrass. That may sound like a small volume until you understand that last year was the first time that cellulosic ethanol has ever been produced commercially in this country. The Energy Information Administration estimates that production will grow to 5 million gallons this year and reach 250 million gallons by 2015. And the RFS requires that every gallon of cellulosic ethanol reduce carbon pollution by at least 60% compared to gasoline. American companies are also producing large volumes of biodiesel, another advanced renewable fuel, which reduces carbon pollution by at least 50% compared to the diesel it replaces. The RFS is incubating an advanced renewable fuel industry that has the potential to offer tremendous climate benefits and grow our economy. But the RFS is not without flaws. As our gasoline consumption goes down and the renewable fuel mandates increase, we could reach the blend wall where adding more ethanol to the fuel supply could damage some engines. Drop-in biofuels offers one solution, but they are still being developed. Over the last few weeks, Chairman Upton and I have released a series of white papers discussing the RFS and soliciting public comments on the law. This process has been bipartisan, and I commend the majority for working together with Democrats. Commenters highlight both benefits of the RFS and concerns, and they have a variety of recommendations for this committee, which we should consider carefully. This hearing gives us a further opportunity to take a careful look at the RFS. As we move forward, the key question we need to ask is, what will the effects be on our climate? If we consider changes to the RFS, they should preserve and strengthen the law's climate benefits. As the President stated so forcefully yesterday, quote, "Someday our children and our children's children will look at us in the eye and they'll ask us, did we do all that we could when we had the chance to deal with this problem and leave them a cleaner, safer, more stable world," end quote. I encourage all members to contemplate this question. We won't get a second chance. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Waxman. At this time, we've concluded opening statements, and today we have only one panel of witnesses. And as I